coast to coast and worldwide on the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Tonight, consciousness and spiritual healing with our special guest, Dr. David Cumes, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. David Cumes, MD, was born in South Africa, received his medical training in Johannesburg. He taught at Stanford Medical Center and currently has a private practice in Santa Barbara, California. He is a Western-trained surgeon and now healer. After extensive travel, which included time with the Bushmen in the Kalahari Desert and the shamans in Peru and South Africa, Dr. Cumes explored the role nature plays in personal healing and transformation. He founded a company called Inward Bound and leads groups on healing journeys to remote wilderness areas. And Dr. Cumes has published extensively in professional journals and is also the author of 3 books. In addition, he has been initiated as a Sangoma Zulu for shaman or indigenous healer and is now qualified to throw divining bones. Dr. Cumes is a bridge between Western medicine and indigenous healing wisdom. He's our guest on Coast to Coast. David, how are you?
Very well, thanks, and thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm going to have to brush up on my Zulu to pronounce that.
You did pretty well. Sangoma is Sangoma. Pretty good, yeah.
It seems that a lot of different kinds of civilizations on this planet have shamans that all practice something that deals with consciousness. I wonder how they all seem to come to the same conclusion that that actually works.
Well, I think the reason is that it's pretty evidential. To give a simple example, in South Africa, if you were going to see a Sangoma, you would pay quite a lot of money, maybe a whole month's salary, to go and get the information. For instance, if you lost your cow, you'd want to go and find out where your cow was. And if the Sangoma couldn't deliver, then you wouldn't go back again. So over the eons, I think these people have, because of their communication with the other side, with the ancestral world, that's especially what the African paradigm is about, the other side gives them information, they're able to travel through the veil into the cosmic field and get very, very accurate information about the life situation of people on this side to help them.
Tell me a little bit about your medical career. You're a surgeon. What are some of the things you've done in the operating room?
Well, I started off actually in South Africa as a general surgeon, got fully trained as a general surgeon there before I went to Stanford to do urology. So I've done pretty much everything in urology and quite a lot in general surgery, which I left in 1975, from removing prostates to some time back even doing kidney transplants.
Did you ever know Dr. Christian Barnard?
No, never knew him. He was in Cape Town, which is about 1,000 miles south, and he was quite a few years ahead of me.
Now, as you practice traditional medicine, at what point in your career did you begin to experiment with or realize that there's a different form of healing out there?
Well, in fact, I think in South Africa, we were trained in a different way to be maybe more conscious of healing, although it wasn't explicit. I think we were really taught to be very wary about not messing up with the inner healer, and there was a much more conservative and less aggressive attitude to healing there, like, don't mess with it if you can't really do some good, almost like Hippocrates. So I would really say that the answer to your question started in about 1987 when I had a bit of a midlife crisis and ended up going to Peru with my ex-wife and encountering some shamans there and then recognizing that these people actually knew a lot more about healing than I think I did and many of my colleagues, and I started to pay attention to what they had to say.
If you had to make a choice today on whether surgery would be the way to go for people or the spiritual healing, could you pick between the two?
No, because I think both of them are magical, and I think the problem with medicine today, allopathic medicine, it focuses entirely on the technological, and the limitation of shamanism is that it focuses entirely on the mythical. And we need to do both. You know, we need to embrace both limbs of the caduceus, the both snakes going up the central column of that medical symbol, the technological and the intuitive, you know, the feminine, the masculine. It's a polarity thing. It's a balance. It's the balance of the opposites that really is where the solution is. So in terms of where I've come now, I certainly do surgery, but if that particular patient wants to have bones thrown to find out maybe why he got his illness and if there are any problems to do with him in the ancestral world or the spirit world or the family world or the cosmic realm, then I would throw bones for them as well. So I'm trying to do both, you know.
If you look at the, let's say, the positive, first of all, aspects of surgery, what would they be?
Well, it's very mechanistic, and, you know, there's no question that if you have a fracture of your femur or you need a total hip replacement or you have acute appendicitis, you don't really want to go and see a shaman. There may be some really outstanding shamans that could reverse a fulminating appendicitis, but why bother? You know, it's like that story about the student who comes to the Buddhist and says that, you know, I've been spending the last 5 years of my life learning to walk on water. And he says to him, well, why would you bother to do that? You know, just take a boat.
Yeah, so, exactly.
You know.
Exactly. That's a good point. Now, with spiritual healing, of course, we do have some tremendous upsides because generally if that works, you've avoided a lot of potential problems.
Yes, and you know, I think that there are instances where it can be done. The problem is the data is not there, and although there's no question that there's anecdotal data, and there's no question that there are shamans, and certainly the Bushmen and the Sangomas heal people and attain spontaneous remissions every day, I'm in a position where I'm steeped in both realms, and I prefer to trust the Western technological realm for certain things, and for the psycho-spiritual, I far prefer to trust anything that the shamanic world has to offer. But I think that we need to realize that there's strengths in both worlds, and that although the shamans might be very good sometimes in obtaining a spontaneous remission, it's probably wise not to rely on that.
With the shamans, do they prescribe special herbs and plants to take along with whatever treatment that they might recommend or perform?
Absolutely. Now, I can speak best for the African, the South African model, and there are thousands of different herbal medicines that are used for many, many things. Unfortunately, we don't know scientifically how many of these really work, but the reason that the shamans are so effective, I think, is twofold. The one thing is that they are using placebo. They are enhancing placebo. You know, if you go and watch a Bushman trance dance around a fire and he falls into a trance and then he starts to handle coals and put them in his mouth and he doesn't get burnt, you kind of get quite impressed with this fellow. So if this fellow comes to you afterwards and then he puts his hands on you and you feel this vibrational energy going into you, the effect of placebo response is enhanced in a thousandfold. And the problem with the Western medicine is that we're trying to discount placebo all the time, and we dilute out the effect of the placebo. So when the oncologist says to the patient, you know, there's about a 50% chance this chemotherapy is going to work, well, he's diluted out the effect of the chemo by about 50%. So we're too, you know, I agree with the scientific method. We need to do double-blind, randomized studies to see if medicines work. But once we do that, we need to tell patients positively, you know, even without lying to them, that this is good stuff, and not tell them the bad news, only tell them the good news. That's the one thing that the Sangomas do far better than we do.
When I was a kid, I used to see pictures of people who claim that they could walk on a bed of nails or lie down on a bed of nails, and they would not get punctured. There wouldn't be any marks on their bodies at all. Was that real, David?
That's very real. You know, that's very real. I could show you Bushmen who can handle fire. There's very well-documented studies, you know, of Sufis going into trance, piercing themselves through the heart, through the spleen, through the kidney, through the liver, very vascular organs. And these guys then go on to die of old age, and they do autopsies on them and find that actually there is evidence of scars where these the way they'd been pierced, but they did not die from these puncture wounds. And there's something weird going on that we don't really understand. The other thing that is very obvious is you can go and watch these Brazilian trans surgeons who do operations. Many of them are channeling what they call spirits from the beyond that do the surgery. For instance, the most famous one was a guy called Arrigo, who channeled a World War One German surgeon called Dr. Fritz. But the current trans surgeons in Brazil have been shown by medical doctors actually to remove tumors, incise patients. They do not care at all about sterility. Sometimes they'll throw the instrument on the floor and they won't, and they'll spit on it to show that it doesn't matter. They make the incisions, the patients don't bleed, they don't need anesthesia, and they heal perfectly well. Now, no one has actually studied the fact that do these patients have a long 5-year survival rate? They haven't got that kind of data. But the mere fact that they survive this procedure is an absolute miracle. So there's no question in my mind that there's something strange going on, and I think it really has to do with an energy field that may be projected from the spirit world. It probably has to do, maybe simplistically, I don't know this, in a way of transferring what's called kundalini energy to the patient, what the yogis call shaktipat, where you can induce a sort of mystical experience in somebody by touching them. The Bushmen do this. The ayahuasca curanderos do this by, they can actually, shoot arrows into patients and knock them down. So there's some field effect that nobody quite understands, and I think that the...
And that's energy, Errol.
That's energy, yeah. And who knows what it is, but it's real.
The Bushmen that you were talking about, the Kalahari, how big is those tribes?
Unfortunately, there's very few left. There probably, I know about 10 years ago, I read a survey that said there were about 60,000 of them left in the Kalahari and surrounding areas, and only about 1,000 of them that are living in the hunter-gatherer sort of lifestyle. I believe it's the hunter-gatherer lifestyle that gives access to the spiritual realm. Because they're masters of the wilderness, because they're incredible hunters, gatherers, trackers, and because they don't have to worry about acquisitions and keeping cattle or making money or doing the things that we have to do, because they actually live on their wits in nature, they're tuned in at a very deep level to the natural world, and this gives them access to the spiritual world much more easily than we do.
And the Kalahari Desert, of course, is in South Africa.
Right? Yeah, and Botswana and Namibia. It sort of extends through all three countries.
Where did they learn this gift?
Well, I think it probably arose, and I'm guessing, spontaneously out of their affinity for nature. I think the big gun of spiritual practice is nature, is Mother Nature. She embraces all the polarities that are necessary for spiritual practice, for spiritual attainment. I think the whole thing is a polarity balance, just like it is with medicine. It's left and right brain, it's yin and yang, it's the left and right sides of the tree of life, it's the sun and the moon energies of the yogis. But the Bushmen have this implicitly in the nature experience, the sun and the moon, the hot and the cold, the wet and the dry, the starving and the satisfied, the thirsty and the quenched. They're living this in the moment day to day, and I think by balancing these polarities, they get incredibly tuned in, because in order to track an animal, you have to be incredibly tuned in, otherwise you're going to starve to death. So I don't think it's a big jump for them to go into the spirit realm, and I think probably what happens is that this spiritual practice, the nature practice, is what moves their kundalini energy, because I think the bottom line, the common denominator of all these practices, whether it's yoga or Buddhism or Kabbalah or shamanism, is the ability to move kundalini energy, or psychedelics can do the same thing. So when the kundalini moves up the body, up the central channel of the spine, and then eventually gets up to the top, to the crown chakra, the seventh chakra, that's where the kundalini feminine shakti energy meets with the Shiva male principle at the crown. And this is the gateway to altered states of consciousness, the oneness experience, opening up the third eye, intuition, clairvoyance, clairaudience, you name it.
Do any of these cultures ever talk about or discuss how they obtained these powers? Were they given from people above them, or how did they get them?
Mostly they will acknowledge that. The interesting thing about the Bushmen is there's rock art showing their trance dance going back 30,000 years. So I think they were the originators of the whole thing. They're probably the original people. But most of them, the Sangomas and the Bushmen, will be the first to tell you that the ancestors or the spirits, and sometimes the Bushmen will even trance and meet the great god, the big god, and they'll say they get messages from these people. The interesting thing about the Bushmen is they do not use psychedelics to do it usually. They might use it to try and get an initiate to break through.
Right.
The Sangomas also rarely use, you know, psychedelics. Most of the time it's with drumming, dancing, and that kind of thing.
But nobody talks about visitations or anything like that?
Yes, very much so.
Oh, they do?
Oh, yeah, visitations by ancestors in their dreams. The Bushmen have a different experience. When they trance, they travel out of body, up a cord, up a ladder, where they call them ropes to God, to the spirit world where they talk to the spirits, and the spirits give them information, possibly about the health of a patient, what to do about a patient, what's going to happen, where the game is, and that kind of stuff. Then they come back down, get back into their bodies. They call this the little death. And when they come back into their body, they will impart the information to the clan and heal with hands-on. And I think they kind of are plugged in directly into the circuitry. You know, they're kind of right there with their finger in the plug. The Sangomas are a bit different. What they do is there's a strong belief in the ancestral world, but it doesn't just have to be your bloodroot ancestor. It can be any ancestor, any spirit who chooses to work through you. But when the Sangoma goes into trance, the ancestor actually comes into their body, and we're familiar with this in the West as calling it trans-channeling. But when you see it in Africa, I mean, there's nobody home. There's somebody in there who's completely different to anything you can recognize. You know, they talk in tongues. They might speak a different language. Their whole facial expression changes, and they will often ask for things that they like to have, like a certain attire, a certain cloth. They might ask for water. They may even ask for, you know, alcohol or whatever they used to like.
Has every experience been positive for you when you witness this, or have there been some real scary times?
You know, the first time was very scary because it looked like witchcraft, and, you know, it looked like I'd come into some demonic thing. But then later on I realized what was going on, and there were kids there, and there were women there, and there were men there, and everybody had such wonderful faces and looked quite comfortable with it. But the person who was in trance looked pretty demonic, so that was scary. But when you looked at everybody else around, they looked incredibly normal. So I felt pretty good about it. I stay away exclusively from the dark side.
Good, good.
But, you know, if you do go there, then it's going to be very scary.
Absolutely. Probably just as powerful as the positive side.
Sadly, yes, just as powerful.
How many people in a tribe know how to do these various techniques? Just the one shaman, or do they all know?
No, there are many. In South Africa, there are 250,000 ordained Sangomas that have gone through the ritualized training and initiation, and there's a lot of them. So, you know, I mean, I know that when I grew up, the African who worked in our house was actually a Sangoma, and, you know, I would go into his room at times and go and check out what he had under his bed. But he would have women coming to him on his day off, and I thought he was an incredible lover. But in actual fact, he was healing them, and he probably had a strong bias in infertility. So there are a lot of them all over, and many of them will not tell the white people who they are because, you know, they're so used to being ridiculed about
right.
it. So they just keep it to themselves.
Have they ever felt as if their powers would ever dwindle or go away?
Absolutely, and sadly they do, because the ancestors require a certain decorum, a certain politeness, a certain sense of manners that mm-hmm. you know, you and I require. They're no different to us. You know, if you have a child or a family member who's rude and arrogant and then takes credit for everything that you do for them, you kind of get annoyed and then you'll check out, you know.
Stay with us. Dr. David Kuhm's our guest. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
The After Dark newsletter. Subscribe now by calling toll-free 1-888-727-5505.
Candy-colored clown, they call the Sandman, tiptoes to my room every night, just to sprinkle stardust and to whisper, go to sleep, everything is all right. I close my eyes, then I drift away.
City of Angels, Premier Radio Networks presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
It sure is. With our guest tonight, Dr. David Cumes. Next hour, we're going to open up the phone lines to give you an opportunity to chat with the doctor about spiritual healing. Maybe you might be able to perform some of this yourself, because we're really going to get into how he was able to be trained, initiated as a Sengoma. That's Zulu, by the way, for shaman. How about that? See, my Zulu is getting better. But we're going to talk with him about that last hour, because so many things are breaking on the Terry Schiavo case and some other things. We're going to open up the phone lines and have some open lines as well. A couple more hours to go, though, with our guest, Dr. David Cumes, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Doctor, you're qualified to throw divining bones. Now, what are they?
Well, the bones are all sorts of things. They're not exclusively bones. They might be shells or stones. But the bones themselves are different kinds of animals with their own particular energy, like they might be, and they're usually small, of course, because you have to be able to keep them in both your hands, like crocodile bones, baboon bones, lion bones, hyena bones, and wild pig bones, sometimes some antelopes as well. And the way it works is that really the spirit throws the bones. There's a field effect, an energetic effect, so that the bones are thrown in a non-random fashion. And then the Sangoma reads the bones according to the understanding that he or she has, that he has acquired from the teacher who's been working with this particular system and working with a spirit. It's kind of like a Morse code, a way of translating a metaphor. The easiest way I could say it is that if you came for bones, I would be throwing the bones for the metaphor of the dream that is your life. It's kind of like unraveling a dream. And the bones will speak to all the psycho-spiritual dimensions of the human condition: money, children, wife, spouse, or a significant other, health, home, heart, soul, ancestral spirits, witchcraft, pretty much anything in the psycho-spiritual realm, depending on how they fall in relation to each other, which are in front, which are in the middle, and so on, you can get a very accurate diagnosis of the person's psycho-spiritual situation.
The bones themselves, I mean, how did you learn how to read them in their particular positions, for example?
Well, I had a particularly good teacher who was an old Zulu who was a master at the bones, and it really took hours and hours of sitting with him and translating the dream and seeing how he did it and understanding how it came. In the beginning, I tried to be too rational about it, and it was kind of quite amusing sometimes because sometimes the bones would fall in a certain way and he would say it meant this, and then like 3 days later, they would fall the same way, and he'd say, well, it means this. And I'd say, well, 3 days later, you said it meant something different. He says, yes, but today it means this. So there is an intellectual component to it, but it's really pretty intuitive, and it's a little bit like interpreting a dream, and it's very democratic. For instance, if it's not, they'll always ask for reinforcement. And if it doesn't sound right to the client, then they turn the dream around, much as you would if you were reading your friend's dream. And he says, no, I don't think that fits with me. And you kind of tweak it a bit and look at it from another perspective.
When you got initiated as a Sengoma, tell us what that process was like.
Well,
it's not secret, is it?
It's a little hard to go through. But the whole process, you know, I would go back and forth to South Africa. And essentially, it consists of dancing and drumming to get into a trance-like state, and then get the ancestors to come and connect with you so that they can work with you. Essentially, you want to get a relationship, a liaison with the ancestor who does want to work through you, but you have to kind of purify the relationship and make it clear. So there are animal sacrifices, there are purifications, there's steaming, there's medicines that you drink. There's a very sacred ceremony where you actually go to the river and you get immersed in the river, which is actually what pretty much got me started.
It's like getting baptized.
It's very much like getting baptized. In fact, there's a church in South Africa called the Zionist Christian Church that is Christian and believes in Jesus, but also believes in the ancestors. And the one who initiated me in this river was actually a Zionist prophet. And it felt very biblical, felt very, very, very comfortable, really. But the passion and the power and the fact that they could go into trance so easily and call in all these spirits, and especially the water spirit, who's the one who kind of comes into your body and then you actually feel the kundalini energy going up into your body, and then that starts you off on your journey. But that's pretty much what it is. At the end of the initiation, there is an examination, and actually you're tested all the way along with bones and trance and so on to make sure that you know what you're doing.
I'm looking at the cover of your book, Africa in My Bones. And with this assortment of things in front of you, you have two dice there.
Yes.
What are they doing there?
The dice are... Yeah, good question.
Playing a little game there or what with the tribesmen?
Well, the dice are numbers, and each number has a meaning. Like number one, if the number one comes up and say it's a question, should I get married, and the number one comes up right in front, then it's a number one idea. You know, everything, it's a good idea. If three comes up, it means you throw again.
Now, who throws it, you or the person?
Initially, the person throws the bones out of the bag, and all the traditions are slightly different, but the one I learned is that you put the bones in the bag, you open up sacred space to invite the ancestors, you sing a song, or you rattle a rattle, you give some kind of offering, like usually tobacco, and you open up sacred space, and then the person puts the bones in the bag, puts a little bit of tobacco in the bag, blows into the bag to give their energy into the bones, says their full name so they can identify themselves, and then throws the bones on the mat. And then the Sangoma reads the bones, and this first throw is a general throw, like a general diagnosis. And then each individual throw after that is for particular questions, and usually I will just take the bones after the relationship with the bones has been established and with the spirit has been established. Then I usually take the bones and answer the particular questions. Each question requires a separate throw, so it can be quite long and tedious. It can sometimes take 2 or 3 hours if somebody has a lot of questions.
Now, the we have in this country, David, and I don't know if you've ever seen it, it's a small eight ball, and on the bottom, it's clear, and inside of it, there's just a whole bunch of answers on like a octagon or something like that. And you shake it up, you ask it a question, you know, am I going to get new riches? How's my health? But it's already got pre-programmed answers in there that float to the bottom, and you can just read it underneath this little tiny eight ball. And you read it, and it says, most assuredly you will, or things like that. How close is something like that to this, where even in this case, they've already got preset answers, eight of them, I think. Yet it's the individual who shakes this up, and it floats to the top, and then you can read whatever the prophecy may be. Is that similar?
I think it is similar in some respects, but I think the key difference is that you usually have to be with somebody who is able to channel some sort of energy from the other side to help you with the problem, whether it's a crystal ball or tarot cards or the I Ching or something. I think the main thing is if there's a field of intention and there's a will and the desire to help you on the other side, then anything can work, whether it's tea leaves or even this ball that you're talking about. But for instance, I could teach you to read the bones pretty effectively, but then if you threw the bones, they probably would not throw random, as opposed to when I'm around, they would throw non-random, and then therefore the message is intelligible.
I see.
So what you really have is a field of intention, and you have a relationship going on between the healer, the patient, and the spirit or the spirits. Now, it's interesting because sometimes what happens is somebody comes to see me and I cannot get a reading on them. It's usually because they're doubting that this is of any value. One person I remember was sent by his wife, but he didn't want to come. That type of
thing. So they're negative. If their approach is negative, it's not going to work for them.
Exactly, because the spirit, again, it's about good manners. They're not going to talk to somebody who has no manners, so they check out.
In the actual healing, because we're dealing with two different things here. We're dealing with healing, and in this case, the bones are almost like prophetic?
The bones can be prophetic, but you know the problem is that there are too many variables and there's free will. I think it was Dan Quayle who said it's difficult to predict things, especially when it comes to the future. And, you know, it's just very hard to know because anything that might be coming down the pike is available to free will. And therefore, depending on the number of variables that are there, then it may or may not come true. But frequently, it can come true. Like, for instance, somebody is interested in a relationship. The bones might show that there's somebody coming down the road who's going to be a potential suitor. But depending on what happens to the suitor, whether they meet somebody else, whether they like you enough, whether they had a bad day, you know, there are just so many variables that he may or may not materialize. But in the present moment, it's highly accurate, and it talks especially to the present moment, and also will sometimes talk to the past. And it will also talk to, you know, about your children, their situation, or about your ancestors, maybe your grandfather on your father's side. Need some attention or something like that. This is what makes the African one so interesting, is that all Africans, or at least all, you know, Africans that are pretty traditional, believe that your ancestors are there to help you in life, and that if you allow them to help you and you nurture a wholesome relationship with them, your life will run much more easily.
As far as healing is concerned, hands-on or not?
Yes, hands-on healing, medicinal plants, which we were talking about. I think what really they are doing is the new, what Larry Dossey has called third era medicine, which is non-local medicine not localized in space and time. So we've already talked about the diagnosis and the bones. Like the Sangoma would probably tell you about your life in California, even though you're sitting in his hut in South Africa. He might also tell you about what happened to you as a kid. So it's not localized in space and in time. So the diagnosis is that way. But also the healing is not localized in space and time. So a lot of the medicines, I believe, are passwords to the ancestors to get the attention to help the client. And there are now very good randomized double-blind studies showing that distant healing, distant prayer works even if the person doesn't know they're being prayed for. There have been a number of very, very good studies. So I think what's really happening is when a client comes to the Sangoma, there might be laying of it on of hands, there might be ritual cleansings, exorcisms even, and there's also this prescriptions for plant medicines, and there's invoking the ancestors, not only maybe the client's ancestors to help, but also the ancestors of the Sangoma to help. So if somebody has a problem, then the ancestors will come along and help, and that might be the way that the prayer or the healing works wherever you are. I mean, I could throw the bones for you in New York, and they would say the same thing that they would say if you were sitting on the floor. Similarly, any healing that's dispensed will be the same whether it's given to you directly or whether it's given to you 3,000 miles away. The only difference is when it's given to you directly and there's a powerful ritual, then of course there's a very powerful placebo effect as well.
How many bones do you have in the back?
There must be about 25, 30 bones, yeah.
Have they been selected for specific reasons?
Yes, the basic kit is selected similar to the one that your Sangoma, your mentor would give you. And, you know, he is the one or she is the one who will give you those bones or tell you which ones to get. And then you add ones as you go along. Like I have certain objects for the California condition that are not that relevant maybe to African healing. So I've added things as I go along, and usually then you set the intention for the bone, you purify the bone, you let it sit in your healing hut for a while, you speak to the ancestors, and then when they know what the bone is supposed to be for, then you use it.
Now, you've got your private practice going on in California. Are you still a medical surgeon, or are you practicing this kind of healing now full-time?
No, I'm still a surgeon. I did a big operation today, and I have a full-time private practice. But then I come home sometimes and I throw bones on the weekends or maybe at night.
Do you ever throw the bones at the medical practice?
No, because I need a sacred space to throw it. And I have a little yurt in my backyard, which is what the ancestors told me to have. And that's where they hang out. And that's where we do the bones. That's not to say I couldn't do it in my practice, but this is the place that's designated or dedicated, and it feels like sacred space, so that's where I work.
What do your neighbors say when they see you go back there tossing bones around?
Oh, they don't know. They think it may be a meditation hut or something. They have no idea what I do, nor do my colleagues.
They will tonight.
Yeah.
After this program.
Yeah.
How will they react? The colleagues.
Well, you know, the thing about it, and I think this is probably, there are many, many Sangomas, you know, infinitely more qualified than I am, and there are now many, many white Sangomas. I think the difference between them and me, and maybe why I was called, because most of us are called to heal. We don't choose it. It sort of chooses you, sometimes reluctantly as well. But I think as long as I do a good job in my medical, in my surgical career, that they don't really care. Of course, the minute something starts to go awry, then they're going to say, oh, you know, Dave is quite a nice guy, but he's lost it. It's probably time that he got out of medicine because he's really gone around the bend. But the fact is I live in both worlds and I do both well, so I don't think they care. I think they will if something goes wrong, though.
What is it, then, David, that we tap into, that you tap into, that the shamans tap into, that's out there in the universe?
It's a good question. I think I used to call it the field, and now I think I've kind of localized it down to three factors, which I like to sort of call the cosmic triad. And I think that a God is one of the factors, but most of us are never going to get any kind of information from the divine. I don't believe that some of the people who think they're getting messages directly from God are getting them from God. I think they're getting them from spirit guides. And, you know, Kabbalah says of God, nobody shall see my face and live. And, you know, Moses had a hard time at the burning bush. So I don't think unless you're Buddha or Jesus, you know, or Moses, you're not going to see or hear from God. So I think what we do is we connect with our higher selves, which we can do in all the traditions, the true self is connected with the divine. We are part of the divine. We're part of the macrocosm. We're a microcosmic representation of the hologram of the universe. So we are able to be intuitive and psychic if we do enough spiritual practice. All of us can open ourselves up to Kundalini energy and to our higher self and get a lot of information. But the third thing is the ancestral realm, which I think is the unique thing that maybe the Africans talk about the most. And the ancestral realm is whatever you want to call it. It's ancestral spirits, your blood root, what they call foreign spirits. If you're Jungian, call it the collective unconscious or the archetypal world, angels, spirit guides, you know, who knows. They also talk about terrestrial spirits, water spirits, and cosmic spirits. So there's spirits everywhere. Not to mention animals that come as power animals to give you messages that are usually sent by the ancestral spirits to help you or to guide you or to give you a warning. So I think this is what's going on in the African realm, is that they identify these spirits, they work with these spirits, they honor them, they form a relationship with them, and then they work with the spirits in three ways, either through the bones or through dreams or through trance, which usually...
And they're all effective?
They're all effective, but of course, if I go into a good physician, you want to find a good Sangoma. They're not all good.
How do you know, though? How do you know what's good, what's bad?
Same thing. You've got to shop around and ask the locals and see who's good, and you know, eventually you'll find out who the good ones are.
You don't have, like, the African Sangoma Association like you have?
You do actually have Sangoma associations, and people register with them, but like the medical association, they wouldn't be able to tell you who was good, you know. There isn't a who's who in Sangoma.
I tell you what, let's take some phone calls next hour. You ready for that?
Sure.
We'll do that. We'll open up all the phone lines, give you an opportunity to talk with our guest, Dr. David Kumes, about healing, how it works. Perhaps you might be able to do this too. Let's find out. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. If you need to email me, that's very simple. It's george@coasttocoastam.com. Dr. Kumes' website is David Kumes. I'll spell it. David, DavidCumes.com.
To access the audio archives of Coast to Coast AM, log on to coasttocoastam.com.